need, and held back crowds. Many protecting their own streets, coming face to face with their
meeting for the San Luis Obispo County South Sanitation South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. We'll do the call to order and roll call. Amy?
Director Austin?
Here.
Director Lee?
Here.
Director Karen Ray Ressam?
Here. And would you join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Under agenda review, is there anyone who would like to change the order of the agenda this evening?
Nothing for me.
Nothing for me either.
All right, so we will proceed as planned. So at this time, we'll move on to item four. This is public comments on items not appearing on the agenda. And Amy, do we have anybody in the queue for public comment?
I have not received any emails about public comment, and I don't see anyone in the queue.
Okay. Well, then I will close public comment at this time and move us to item five. This is our consent agenda. And tonight we have three items on here. We have the approval of warrants, the approval of meeting minutes of May 6th, 2020, and requesting approval to purchase chemical pumping systems. Director Lee, do you have any questions on these three items?
I do not.
Director Austin, any questions from you?
I have no questions.
Nor do I. Would anyone like to, Amy, let me check with you and see if anyone is in the queue who'd like to speak on these items.
I see no one in the queue.
Okay, then I will close public comment and throw it back to the board for possible action.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the consent agenda as presented.
I will second that.
Any discussion?
None.
Okay, Amy,
Nothing.
Okay. Amy, can we get a roll call, please?
Director Lee?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Ray Ressam?
Yes. That takes us to item six. And we have four items on item six tonight. The first one is 6A. This is public hearing and adoption of Resolution 2020-414, approving the final budget for fiscal year 2020 and 2021. Mr. Gent.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. And before you this evening, let me scroll to the staff report. We have the 2021 fiscal year budget, and it is recommended that your board review the budget for fiscal year 2021, open the public hearing to receive public input regarding the adoption of the budget for fiscal year 2021. Close the public hearing and direct revisions, if any, be incorporated in the budget for fiscal year 2020 and 2021, and adopt resolution 2020-414 approving the budget for fiscal year 20/21. At this point, I'll turn it over to Amy Simpson to give a short presentation on the staff report.
Okay, can you see my screen?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. On May 6, 2020, the board reviewed and discussed the draft budget for fiscal year 2020-21. The district budget for fiscal year 2021 is attached. This budget covers the period of July 1st, 2020 through June 30th, 2021. The budget will meet the operational, maintenance, and capital needs of the district. Using past experience and professional judgment, the budget for fiscal year 2020-21 was prepared using conservative estimates and assumptions, mindful of the need to operate the facility in a safe, cost-effective, efficient manner while complying with applicable federal, state, and local requirements. Revenue values for wastewater and collection fees were obtained from the district's 2016 rate study, ordinance number 2016-01, approved by the board on February 17th, 2016. tabulated below is the summary, values extracted from the consolidated budget. Fund 19 revenues are generated from primarily wastewater service charges. Other revenues are generated from brine disposal with minor contributions from lease payments and reimbursements. Fund 19 supports the following general categories of district activities: personnel, permits, fees, and licenses, communications and computer support, administrative costs, disposal services, utilities, maintenance tools and replacements, materials, services and supplies, training, education and memberships, scheduled maintenance, new capital equipment, and a transfer out of Fund 19 supports Fund 26 projects. Staffing. Currently, the district is fully staffed. The staff roster consists of the district administrator, a secretary bookkeeper, plant superintendent, plant supervisor, plant senior operator, a laboratory technician, and three operator in training plant operator twos. There are 9 full-time positions funded in the draft budget. All 9 positions are currently filled. Due to the additional equipment and processes associated with the redundancy project, it is anticipated that in fiscal year 21-22, staffing will need to increase by 1 to 10 full-time equivalent to provide adequate operations and maintenance. Fund 20. The majority of Fund 20 revenue is from connection fees. A minor amount of revenue is received from interest on the fund balance account. This fund is the designated fund in support of the redundancy project. This fund supports capacity, expansion, and studies. In this budget, we have budgeted for the memorandum of agreement with the City of Pismo for a joint environmental impact report, the wastewater redundancy project, and an expenditure of $135,000 is proposed for expansion of the district's supervisory control and data acquisition, otherwise known as SCADA. Fund 26. Fund 26 expenditures are wholly supported by transfers from other funds. The draft budget calls for a transfer from Fund 19 of $1,552,000. Fund 26 has traditionally supported replacement projects. Proposed Fund 26 project budgets. $1,427,000 is proposed under replacement and improvement. Capital replacement and improvement items for this budget are a new ASCO dishwasher, a brine flow meter, clarifier number 2 sludge pump, cogeneration unit design, digester number 2 rehab, digester sump pump, FFR distributor drive rehab, the FFR pump number 1 rehab, influence slide gate, a lab centrifuge, a lab furnace, reference weights, sludge feed pumps, sludge bed water valve, standby water well, a street sweeper, and a telephone system. $25,000 is proposed under emergency equipment repair, and $100,000 is proposed under trunk sewer maintenance. In conclusion, the budget emphasizes operations, maintenance, and the redundancy project. And that concludes my report.
Thank you. Going in opposite order this time, Director Austin, do you have any questions of staff?
I do not have any questions.
Director Lee?
I do have just one or two questions, and Jeremy, I apologize for not getting these to you in advance, but during Amy's reporting indicated we'll be adding one staff member, not this fiscal year, but the following fiscal year. And so I'm anticipating that the personnel funds and so forth are adequate in future budgets from our planning standpoint. Is that correct?
Yes, that additional staff member was identified in the Bartlewells financial analysis that increased rates to accommodate the redundancy project. So those future operational costs are built into the rate structure.
Okay, great. I thought I had heard that previously, so thank you for the confirmation. And then my only other question at this point is the cogen unit design that's in the capital replacement program. So this is for design of that programs, but I recall that that unit, and I recall that you're having discussions with is either PG&E or SoCal Gas about the opportunity to replace it. Now, that would that be in a future fiscal year budget, or is that something that we might be able to partner with them on in this fiscal year if appropriate?
So when you're referring to this fiscal year, I assume you're referring to the proposed, the 2021 yes. Fiscal year. So yes, what this, there may be, if we identify that we want to move forward with that project, it would be my intent to come back and get funding for construction. With at this point, though, constructing the new cogen with redundancy being started and we've got the digester rehab proposed, just contractor work on site may be a logistical issue that we may. So we did not propose reconstructing the cogeneration unit at this point. And we couldn't bring it online during our digester rehab anyways, because we would have our gas system modified at that point. When we were doing the digester cleaning and coating project that you see in the one list there. So from that standpoint, if we get favorable news on moving the cogen forward, we would want to come back and request of your board potential funding to maybe move into construction next fiscal. But in all likelihood, it would be the following fiscal before we would be looking at construction level funding for the cogen unit.
Very good. Which actually dovetail into one other question that just came up is, obviously you've got a capital program that's going to need some assistance from consultants as well as your own online staff. So is this a capital replacement improvement program that existing staff can accommodate in the next fiscal year?
Yes, with the one questionable item is that digester cleaning directly in the and covering that with Chief Plant Operator Michael Jones. Again, I'll circle back to the logistics of redundancy. There is a chance that we would have to non-perform that digester cleaning. However, it has been 10 years since that digester has been cleaned. And so the idea of waiting 3 years on redundancy, we reviewed that with staff. We brought all the operators in and had a conversation what the risks might be with waiting. And the staff thought we could move that forward and not interfere with the redundancy project. So that's why we went ahead and presented that with this year's budget to get that accomplished. But I will say that if space gets too tight on sites, that would be the project that we may abandon and move into future years.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's all my questions.
I want to make sure that I got the pronoun you just used correctly. When you said that in future years, you meant the cogen, correct?
The cogen, or the digester cleaning may have to move to the following year if. The issue with redundancy, once we get into construction with redundancy, there's going to be a lot of space occupied by the contractor at the site. And so we would need to bring in another much smaller contractor to assist on the digester cleaning and coating project that Michael has in the budget. And so if those logistics become too complicated, there is a chance that $965,000 digester cleaning may be shelved to a future fiscal year and deferred out to allow for better coordination on site to get that work done.
And how does cogen potentially fit into that? I want to get all three of those. And let me just throw you what my question was, which is presuming that Central Coast Blue's preferred site is the one that moves forward on the piece of land that Pismo purchased. I haven't been updated on that at this point. So can you talk a little bit about how that has morphed in terms of our timeline? And so I guess I'm asking for the digester the Cogen redundancy and Central Coast Blue all at the same time in terms of timing?
So I'll start with Central Coast Blue. For phase one of Central Coast Blue, there's likely no coordination at the site. If it goes at the piece of property that was purchased by Pismo recently, they would intercept the Pismo outfall line prior to it getting to our site and intercept that their discharge water and treat it there, and then plumb in to the outfall that comes to the district, the Pismo line that comes to the district, to discharge the brine waste from the advanced treatment facility. Okay. So they can move forward with phase one without any complexities with the redundancy project. So there's no coordination or overlap necessary for phase one of Central Coast Blue.
Okay.
On the Cogen, so the proposed budget and fiscal is intended to take us through the PG&E program and the design efforts necessary to get information through the PG&E program and come up with an actual capital cost to build the project. And so the $100,000 funding that's proposed in the budget is meant to complete that exercise. Now, if that design effort and coordination with PG&E happens quickly during 2021, the fiscal year, we may come back at mid-year and say we have a project that we would like to advance and ask for additional budget to pay for the cogen system. Now, there's also opportunities that through the PG&E program that we may be able to lease or finance one. And so it may not be an actual upfront capital investment for the district, but more of a payment plan for the cogen system. And so that will be discussed and hashed out in the design process.
So just TBD. Got it.
You got it.
Okay. So if there are no more questions of staff, Amy, can you, I'll go ahead and open up public comment. Amy, is there anyone in the queue that would like to speak on this?
I see no one in the queue.
And no emails?
No emails.
Okay, then I will close public comment and bring this back to the board for potential action. Linda, you're muted. I think you're...
Okay, I was trying to, I got it. So you were looking for a motion?
Yes, ma'am.
As Linda's looking for that, I'll go ahead and, since I've got my page up, Linda, I'll go ahead and make a motion that we adopt resolution number 2020-414, approving the budget for fiscal year 2020-21.
Second that.
Any discussion?
No.
Nope.
Okay. Amy, can we get a roll call, please?
Director Lee?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Ray Russum?
Yes. Thank you so much. That takes us to item 6B. This is authorizing the district chairperson to execute loan documents for the district's redundancy project. Mr. Gent.
Yeah, good evening, Jeremy Gent, district administrator. The item before you is approval of a staff report there. The item before you is authorizing the district chairperson to execute loan documents for the district's redundancy project. It's recommended that your board adopt resolution number 2020-415, authorizing the chairperson for the board of directors to sign approval and acceptance forms and other documents necessary to secure loans and issue and sell bonds associated with the district's redundancy project. The district is pursuing financing for the estimated $29.1 million redundancy project. The project funding will be secured from three different sources. These sources are direct cash that we have in reserves at the district of approximately, it's not our total reserves, but we're contributing $8.3 million toward the redundancy project, a USDA low interest loan of approximately $4.3 million, and municipal bonds of approximately $16.5 million. This effort this evening is being taken to provide the authority and to clarify the appropriate district officer to be signatory to various agreements and documents that are required to secure the necessary funding for the redundancy project. These documents include, but are not limited to, the documents and agreements for both USDA financing and municipal bond financing. Adopting the attached resolution will ensure that the district has established a process to timely execute documents and advance the project on schedule. And with that, that concludes my staff report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Director Lee, any questions of staff?
Just one, thank you. So realizing this is a step in the process, I recall seeing somewhere in tonight's discussion that we kind of have a outline for how we get through the bidding and the process and so forth. So this action needs to take place before we start doing those, just from a timing standpoint, or what's the progression to do this action first, if you don't mind?
So this action is really to complete the USDA application process first and foremost. Gotcha. So at this point, working through USDA, we did get information back from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture is producing documents right now that we will have to sign for them to move forward with processing and finalizing the loan terms. The first round of signing will not obligate the district at any point. It will just allow them to program the money. And so there are steps that need to be taken this month that will require signatures as illustrated in this resolution. And so that's why it's being brought before you at this time. There was a previous version similar to this adopted by the board back in 2016. But it was largely referencing state revolving fund and made the chairperson the signatory for SRF funds when those became available. And so we reached out to council and asked them to prepare a similar resolution so that we could execute the USDA documents moving forward with the project.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate the update, and good news to have this as a next step.
Director Austin, any questions?
I don't have any questions. I think it's a good good step to have. I think it's a good thing that it would keep the schedule and the clarification. So I think it's great.
And I don't have any questions. So I'll go ahead and open it up to public comment. Amy, is there anyone in the queue or in the email?
There is not.
Okay, well then I'll close public comment and again bring it back around to the board for consideration.
And I'll go ahead with them. A motion that we adopt resolution 2020-415, authorizing the chairperson for the board to sign approval and acceptance forms and other documents necessary to secure loans and issue and sell bonds associated with the district's redundancy project.
Second that.
Any discussion?
Just get your hands on nice and flexed up.
Amy, can we get a roll call, please?
Director Lee?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Ray Russom?
Yes.
Okay.
Item 6C is approval of legal services contract with the law firm of Jones and Meyer. And Mr. Collins?
Yes, I would like to recuse myself from this item, Madam Chair. Jones and Meyer is my employer, and so because of that financial interest, I need to recuse myself and leave the meeting completely.
Thank you. And we'll give you a call when it's time to come back in. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And seeing that he has left the meeting, we'll go ahead and throw this back over to Mr. Gent.
Yes, good evening. Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. The item before you is approval of legal services contract with the law firm of Jones and Meyer. Staff recommends that the Board of Directors enter into a contract with the law firm of Jones and Meyer to provide general counsel legal services to the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. General Counsel Gil Trujillo resigned his position with the district effective February 7th, 2020. Gil was retained by the board on November 4th, 2015 to provide general counsel services for the district. With his departure, the board directed staff to solicit proposals for new district general counsel. At the February 5th, 2020 board meeting, the board directed staff to issue an RFP for general counsel. On the March 4th, the district published the RFP with proposals being due on April 9th. The district received proposals from four different firms. The scoring for the RFPs evaluated four key areas: relevant experience representing water, wastewater, or utility districts, thoroughness of proposal, the ability to meet the needs of the district, and the cost of services. The firm of Jones & Meyer was ranked highest or tied for highest in each of the four categories, securing staff's recommendation. The firm is a full-service law firm specializing in municipal and local government law and has served the district as special counsel since April of 2018. The district currently has adequate budget for anticipated legal costs for both the fiscal year 19-20 and as proposed in the 20/21 budget. That concludes my staff report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Director Austin, any questions?
The only question I have is on, it would be 3C, and I just need clarification on the travel time. It says all costs and expenses, including travel time and mileage, except those set forth in section 3F, shall be deemed included. So travel time is included in the special, which one would it be included in? It doesn't come off as an extra when there's travel time. I just don't understand how that part of it works.
Yeah, let me take a look. So you're referring to 3F, Director Austin?
3C or 3D, it says, well, 3C, it says all costs and expenses, including travel time. So there's no separate billing for travel time.
No, they will bill for, they will be billing for travel time. They're not excluding travel time. When they were a special counsel, they did, as a matter of point, exclude travel time coming from Orange County to the district. Mm-hmm. But the proposed contract before you with the monthly visits, they are proposing to capture travel time from Southern California.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That was the only question I had. Everything else looks fine with me.
Director Lee?
And actually, Director Austin's question kind of dovetails towards mine, which was there was some discussion as we were going out for these services to see if there was going to be a local presence. Has Jones Myers indicated that they're planning or two, or are we encouraging them to open up a local office so that there is that reduction in staff time? And obviously a local knowledge of the area.
They have indicated that I certainly can't hold it as a commitment to them, and I'll tell you why. So they have indicated having a larger presence here on the Central Coast and hoping that getting this business will actually allow them to do that. Back in 2018, they did briefly open a Santa Maria office and have since closed that office. And so that's why I'm reluctant to speculate that that they will re-engage that concept in any short-term duration without asking the firm the question directly or whether there's any intent. But they do have interest in doing work up here, but with the elimination of the brief Santa Maria office that they have, I wouldn't interpret that as something they would be doing in short order.
Okay. Okay. And then, so the contract that's before us tonight is similar to our past legal counsel contracts?
Yes, that's correct. It should be noted that, I think what's noteworthy is Mr. Trujillo billed out at $185 an hour, and I think this is $215 an hour. So that's a notable change. It was on the ranking the proposals, the billing rate for Jones & Meyer was the lowest out of the options presented to us. That was one of the four categories that was analyzed in ranking the RFPs. And so they were one of the lower. The other thing I'll point out is none of the four proposers were local to the Central Coast. So all would have had travel time to attend the monthly meetings.
Okay, great. Thank you. Those are all my questions.
And we're just going a three-way on this one. So when we determined and ranked what the hourly billing rate would be, including travel time. I'm bulking just a little bit. I understand that the legal services that they provide are far and away more common online and via the phone and all of that. So I know that the service they provide is often remote and doesn't require their attendance. But in terms of, you know, our meetings tend to be roughly an hour long at this point, and it's going to cost $1,200 to get an hour's worth of representation at $215 an hour. I'm struggling with that just a little bit.
And that's something, you know, with your board's direction, I'd be happy to go try to renegotiate that with the firm at this point to see if we can come to what would be a more agreeable term on the travel time. And if we have, you know, models where out of town attorneys are not billing, maybe we can point to those and indicate that it's not typical to be charged travel time to these type of meetings.
And I guess I don't really object to charging travel time. I just object to charging travel time at $215 an hour with a 6-hour round trip. Because that's not providing legal services during that time. I mean, it's a different service. So I could support some sort of level of travel time, but just not at that $215 rate. That seems, it doesn't seem to match what's going on. So I would like to, maybe we could, I'd either like to continue that discussion, or I don't know that we can really have Keith here to have that conversation because he's recused himself.
Correct. So I think this it's something that, to be honest, I agree with you. This is a section that caused me some grief, because we are paying full freight on, and not getting a legal service during that period of time. And so some more flat fee for coming from Orange County, or, you know, some hourly rate to cover expenses of driving, but when you're not using your legal capacity to bill at a full rate, it does seem unbalanced to the district for that service.
And further, if they're hoping to have an increased presence here on the Central Coast, which I totally would love, and I like the representation and I have no objections, and I'd like to see this contract consummated. You know, for example, let's say District B also retains them, and so they have travel time that's representing two instead of one. There's nothing in this contract that really allows for some sort of reduced billing based on a shared trip.
Right, right. And, you know, this is, it's common today for, you know, attorneys when they're driving to use the phone and have, you know, access to clients and have some billable time while they're driving too. And so that, you know, that's an opportunity for them to use that time in the vehicle to maybe offset some of those costs, which would further, you know, justify our argument that it doesn't make sense. Now, I will say the previous agreement under the special counsel, if somebody from Jones and Meyer had to attend a special meeting, it was billed at a $500 flat trip that they would come up here for. So that would be something that we could revisit based on that old contract. Is no, if you need to, that was intermittent, you know, Keith only came as needed. And so if he had to come up here, it was a $500 fixed fee to attend a meeting or to come up for litigation. So that would be a way that would maybe isolate those costs. And luckily we're on once a month meetings, which also reduces the travel time, versus when we were twice a month, it would have been something we really would have had to be mindful of, because we would have been spending as much on travel time as our as legal costs.
Even more. I mean, it's six times the cost.
Right. Right.
So how many hours do they commonly provide outside of meeting time to you typically?
You know, that varies based on, you know, month to month. I'd have to look at some, I would say generally between $2,000 and $3,000 a month. So
10 to 15 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. But that, I mean, it could be like $1,200 one month and 4,000 the next, but.
Okay, well then, if there are no further staff questions at this time, anybody have further questions before I open up for public comment? Okay, hearing that, Amy, is there anyone in the queue or with email on this particular item?
I see no one.
Okay, thank you for that. So I'll close public comment and bring this back around to us. I think it's pretty clear what the board is asking for. Linda, what are your thoughts?
Yes, I would like to see that's the one thing that I, you know, caught my eye was the travel time. So I would like to see if Jeremy can negotiate something. There's another question. Is there a way after when we go back to regular meetings in person that he can be, on internet?
Oh, huh.
Be mobile instead of having to drive up. Is there a way he can be, online with us? Not all the time, but maybe like when it's just a real small meeting that there'd be no need for him to drive up. But if he was available, I don't know if that's an opportunity, but I would. Yeah, I think there's too much in the travel time. So if we could work on that, that's the only thing I see. Everything else is fine. I like to retain this council. I think he does a good job and I really want to retain them. So that's what I have to say.
Director Lee?
I'm consistent with Director Austin's comments. And I guess maybe a question for Jeremy before we continue the discussion is, would there be a concern of continuing this item to and providing additional direction for negotiations, or is there a urgency to starting this contract because of what's occurring with redundancy?
Not at this time, Jeff. I think continuation would not be disruptive at all because Jones and Meyer would remain the interim general legal counsel. The effect on our representation would be unnoticed.
Okay.
And, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I'd be supportive of moving down that path if the rest of the board is comfortable with that.
And I would too, and I would just add a little math in there that for a 1 hour meeting, that's roughly 7 hours worth of billing. And if we're getting roughly 10 to 15 hours every month, that's a significant change to the hourly cost that I think affects that portion. So I think we have really significant grounds to do this. And I look forward to maybe something that's a little bit more reflective of how that time would be used and I'm hesitant to say things like double dipping, but that's what I think. If we were having an in-person meeting, that's what the public would be saying. So I look forward to that. So do you need a specific motion on that, Jeremy? I think probably you do.
Yeah, I think the motion without counsel here would be along the lines to go back and renegotiate a more favorable term for travel time with the firm. Does that capture the direction or?
Yeah, and you know what, I'll go ahead and make a motion that we direct staff to go back and negotiate item 3C of the contract related to billing for travel time and then come back with a hopefully revised contract at our next meeting if possible.
Will do.
I'll second that with one quick question for Jeremy. Is realizing that you're negotiating with a group that you're working with on a day-to-day basis, is there a desire or a need to have a board member be part of that discussion just so there's not an opportunity to strain the relationships as it's just starting?
I'm always welcome, if there's additional, help or oversight needed. I don't have any concerns about negotiating with with Keith on this item, or you know, the principals at Jones and Meyer. They've been an outstanding firm. I don't think that, you know, us having good, you know, fiduciary responsibilities and looking out for the district will, you know, be offensive to them in any way. So I think the relationship would remain fine negotiating, but if somebody would like to participate, they're welcome to.
And I was just throwing out there in the opportunity to provide the a little balance if you need it, but I'm good with you approaching it directly. And if you do need assistance, reaching out to probably the chair first would be the approach I would suggest.
Okay.
Sounds good. Any further questions or discussion?
None from me.
Okay, Amy, we have a motion and a second on the floor.
Director Jeff Lee?
Yes.
Director Linda Austin?
Yes.
Director Ray Russom?
Yes. Sorry, I got to get back to my agenda. All right, that takes us to, so let's go ahead and call Keith and bring him back in.
Okay.
And do you want to let him know what the decision was at this time or after the meeting?
I'll give him a call after the meeting, unless it's more appropriate to do now during the meeting. But I would call him after.
Okay, let's do that.
Okay, I notified him.
Okay, we'll wait for him to sign back in. So we'll just briefly wait for a moment. All right, we've got you back. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That takes us to item 6D. This is District Administrator and Plant Operations Report. Mr. Gent.
Yeah, good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. Michael Jones is not with us this evening, so I'll be presenting both portions of the Plant Administrator and Plant Operations Report. A couple updates on the redundancy project. We did receive, as I mentioned earlier, a response from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. With this response, the USDA application has been completed and submitted, so that finalized that. We expect to receive a letter of conditions by the end of the month, and actually we've been informed that it's coming more quickly than that, so that's great news. Interest rates are expected to be finalized between 1.375% and 1.625%. And then I threw in, now that we have this piece of the puzzle, it firms up our ability to predict some future dates. And if we look at our master schedule that MKN keeps tracking for us, I pulled out some of the key dates. We would begin advertising the project on August 17th, which would lead to a bid opening approximately on the 12th of October. Once we had those bid results, we would provide that information to our bond team, and they would go out on the market, and we would do a bond sale. It would be anticipated on November 17th. And then we would issue a notice to proceed for construction to the contractor approximately on November 23rd. And that would lead to anticipated project completion the beginning of March of 2023. Central Coast Blue, since the last meeting, I've got no update from the district's perspective on that. Some miscellaneous items. We provided a LAFCO update. LAFCO, I think I mentioned in some other meetings, was doing a sphere of influence update for the region for some of the member cities that had, you know, very minor edits to the district, no effect on the boundary or the operations. So we provided some text and language with current use and consumption, number of people that we represent at the district, those type of things went into that document. Some COVID-19 modifications that we've implemented at the plant. So we do daily temperature checks with the operators. We've implemented one person per vehicle. We've provided a hand sanitizer in all the vehicles. Masks and face coverings have been provided for staff use. And we've got a small break room. It's pretty tight quarters. So we've limited that to three people to take breaks so that they can maintain 6 foot separation. Plant tours, we have suspended plant tours. We're not bringing in unnecessary people into the plant during the shelter and at home order. So those have not been occurring. A couple upcoming items. We are expecting the revisions to the Kennedy Jenks. This has been on there for a while, waiting on the final USDA documents. Once we internalize what USDA's conditions are, that'll steer us, like if there are any changes that need to be added to the Kennedy Jenks contract to modify the plans to satisfy the USDA conditions. So I would anticipate either July or August for the Kennedy Jenks contract to come back. We would be looking for board authorization to bid the redundancy project at the August meeting, and then a resolution authorizing the district to sell bonds for the redundancy project. This would be a document crafted by our bond council. And that schedule, working with bond council, would need to be completed at the October meeting in order to satisfy the schedule. So that completes my administrator's report. And I will pause there in case there's questions before I move into the operations report.
Any questions of Mr. Jim?
I did have one or two, if that's okay. So looking at the schedule for redundancy and the upcoming events, would based upon this schedule, the contract award be the first or our meeting in November at that time? Would that be the expected time frame?
I don't have the award date right in front of me, Jeff, without opening up the schedule. We do have all that mapped out on what the award date, but yes, it would be based on this. The award date would be the first meeting in November. Okay. And some of this is crafted with the instruction to, on some of these key items. I've informed our team that if we had to have a second meeting on the third week, to meet this schedule, that we would do that. So that's in play here as well. I should point out that I have directed the project team that date is still available, and that if we need to hit that for something like advertising or award, we would have that second monthly meeting in order to accommodate that.
Gotcha, great, I appreciate that. And then the only other question, and it maybe gets updated in the operations report, but you are participating in a pilot program for COVID-19 and the antibodies test. Is that still proceeding, and how's that going?
Yes, that's correct. We are participating in the joint study that's being ran by Harvard and MIT. And we have provided wastewater samples weekly throughout the month of May. We have not received any results back. I checked with the lab technician today to see if she had received any results back. We have been copied on some of the other agencies that are locally that are participating in the program as well. So we've seen some of the results coming back, and they estimate a COVID infection rate for the community. And so at this point, we've seen results from Paso, Morro Bay, Los Osos, San Luis, Cayucas even had results, you know, just pulled off of their wastewater stream, not from their plant. We're expecting those results anytime. And I would intend, when we see those, I will send out just an informational one-way blast to the board members so that you guys know what the results were of the study.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks for that. I forgot about that.
I just have one quick question. Did you say that there was a COVID infection rate showed up in the other communities?
So of all the ones that I've reviewed, only Cambria and Paso came back with showing presence in the wastewater streams. Now, you know, it's not an exact science. It is kind of surprising that the city of San Luis did not show any infections in their wastewater stream, but that was the initial results from this study. But the accuracy seemed pretty close for what we would expect to see in Paso Robles. For they estimated approximately 200 infections in Paso, which I think there's been around 103 confirmed cases in Paso, and so, you know, unconfirmed. So that math made sense. They estimated approximately 5, I believe. And I don't want to share other people's numbers. I'm just going off the recollection of these public documents that were shared. And so that kind of matches the infection rate that Cambria has been experiencing. So there seems to be some validity to the way they're doing the RNA sequencing to identify the virus in the wastewater stream.
Thank you.
Okay, if there are no more questions, let's go on to the operations report.
Okay, so operations report. So we've modified staffing the district, but we returned to district full staffing on May 18th. I think we had talked about the intending that at the last meeting. So at this point, all staff has been in good health and all staff is at work. We received the repair parts for the ocean outfall repair, and that is scheduled for tomorrow night into Friday morning. That'll be us in the city of Pismo and the contractor R. Baker working on that repair. Our primary clarifier number 2, FRM's doing that project, and that project continues. They've finished all the removal of the equipment, all the removal of the liner, and they're now coating. Applying the coating right now. So we expect to bring that back online in July. Some operations and maintenance tasks I'll try to run through quickly here. Change the boiler air filter, Five Cities Plumbing installed a new sink in the men's bathroom. We had issues with the faucet in there. The fire protection performed our annual inspection. We disposed of hazardous waste at the Integrated Waste Management Authority down in, I believe it was Napomo. Replaced chemical hoses, chlorine contact tank, installed new seal and pumpers, redirected watering hoses to the secondary aerifier, removed extra sump pump out of the secondary, checked and marked underground alerts, greased things in the centrifuge, added bleach to digest with algae control, continued inspection of manholes, organized and cleaned the rental container that we have on site, which on that one, I do want to thank staff for getting that done. We have a rental container. Michael refers to it as a C train there. That's just a big metal container that we've been renting for about $98 a month since I started at the district, that was brought in for an office renovation. And so staff got all that cleaned out. They took it upon themselves to do it. It's been a task that we've been looking at doing for a while. So thanks to staff for getting that done. Cleaned the plugged polymer system and got it back into operation. We had our annual thermographic inspection done by Toma Electric. They come in and inspect all of our electrical panels to make sure that there's no shorts or heat issues in our electrical panels. We flushed our fixed film reactor, and we cleaned the final 4 channels of the chlorine contact tank. Some work orders that were completed, performed preventative maintenance on the new loader, verified chemical tanks were not siphoning. There's an anti-siphon device, and so that gets inspected. We rinsed down the clarifiers, performed inspection of the digesters, vacuum and pressure release valves, flushed all sump pumps, replaced all desiccators in electrical panels throughout the plant, performed preventative maintenance on the forklift, performed preventative maintenance on all clarifiers, changed oil in the digester mixing pump. Training operations staff received training on incident reporting during the reporting period. And then on callouts on May 24th at 10:45 in the evening, we had a low influent ORP. Operations staff responded and the there were no abnormalities observed, and the probe returned to normal operation after it was reset. So with that, that concludes the operations report, and I'm happy to try to answer questions.
Any questions of staff?
I have one. What's the polymer system?
So the polymer system, we have two polymer systems. The one that's being referred to is we have a polymer system that is added to when we're running our centrifuge. We add this polymer. It's a type of gel that goes in with our biosolids that actually changes the consistency of it and allows us to get more water out of that biosolids. And that's necessary for us to haul that off. There's a water requirement. We have to have so much water removed from the biosolids in order for the composting facility to take them. So that's the, so it's a polymer feed. It's a tube of gel that gets fed into the centrifuge, which is like a big washing machine on the spin cycle.
Okay.
And that helps get the cake to form. That's what that's about. Well, Michael would have done a better job.
Also, just a quick, the low inflow, what's ORP?
That's oxidation reduction potential. And basically that's indicating the disinfection potential. It's like the chlorine level. The amount of bleach in the water is what the ORP correlates to. So we're injecting chlorine to disinfect the water. And if that that oxidation reduction potential falls too low, we'd set an alarm and say, hey, we might not be meeting disinfection. We have multiple probes. So sometimes they drift out of calibration and they need cleaned and reset, and they come right back in.
I guess that was all the questions. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any other questions of staff? I thank you very much for that report and the continued smooth operation of the plant. We all appreciate that. That takes us to item 7, board member communications. Does anyone have communications to share at this time?
I do not.
Sorry, Madam Chair, did we take public comment on that last item?
Oh, we did not. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Amy, you're smiling there. You knew it. You should have waved me down. So let's go ahead and go backwards to 6D and check with Amy and see if there's any. I'll go ahead and open public comment. Is there anyone in the queue or with email?
We have one attendee, and it's Jake at State Farm, but his hand is not raised.
Jake, 3, 2. Thanks for attending, Jake. So I'll go ahead and close public comment. Thank you so much. And it is a receive and file, so we will consider this received and filed. That takes us to board member communications, item 7. And Director Austin had none. Director Lee, any communications?
Just one to share this evening is that Monday night, the Grover Council did review the Central Coast Blue MOA. And we did make a recommendation to enter into that MOA with the other partner agencies, subject obviously to the review by those agencies. And we authorized our city manager to enter into
Am I the only one that's
behind that, assuming there was no A.
You stopped the feed stopped for a moment. So you said subject to partner agencies, and I think that's the last thing we all heard.
Gotcha. Sorry about that. So we did authorize our city manager to enter into that MOA subject to the partner agencies also approving the document and moving forward. There is about 4 significant off-ramp opportunities, and there's ultimately, the goal of the MOA is to provide direction to PISMO to continue the EIR, as well as get the project in line and secure significant funding for construction. So lots more to follow on that, but this was a step in the right direction from our perspective, and hopefully PISMO and Arroyo Grande will follow suit, but that's up to those individual councils. That's all I had for tonight.
Thank you. And I have no board member communications except for to thank their public for their continued patience in these Zoom meetings, which we are all, I'm sure, coming to the end of our ropes with. So thank you to the public who might be watching this after after the fact. That takes us to item 8, adjournment, and we will see you all again on July 1st. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Good night.
Thanks. Nice work.